Good morning, 7:32 a.m., October the 31st, 2016. So when the holiday season. Oh, the clouds are now getting, those are beautiful. There's a heavy cloud deck off to the east, well off to the east, somewhere over Kansas. So the sunrise itself was sort of obscured this morning. I don't do anything until these cars go away. But the sun is up high enough behind that cloud deck now that it's shining into the clouds. The high clouds up here over my head and off a little bit to the west. They're beautiful. There are these mackerel patches of white against a dark blue. And then just the trailing edges are still really gray, nighttime looking. Beautiful. So I'm back. I got back from Denver yesterday afternoon. Did a little check-in with the Golden Age of Solar Clipper Facebook group. Caught up a little bit on email that I didn't have a chance to deal with while I was away. And loaded the latest version from my netbook over to my main writing computer so that I can get going. It was a strange morning so far. I woke up at like 10 minutes of 5 and thought, I'm not quite ready to get up yet. I don't know, should I get up? Should I not get up? And so I'm laying in bed thinking about it, and then I look over at the clock and it's 5:30. And I'm thinking, oh, that's odd. How did that happen? Because I didn't remember going to sleep. I didn't remember waking up. I just, looked at the clock again, and it was half an hour later. And it happened again. I was thinking, oh, yeah, I should probably get up. It's 5:30. I wanted to get 1,000 words in before I came up for the walk. That didn't happen because I fell asleep again. And by the time I got up, got a cup of coffee, got my brain sort of out of the fog of being asleep, the alarm clock was telling me, my phone was telling me, it's really time for you to go for your walk. And I thought, well, I'll just write 1,000 words. No, go for the walk, get the blood moving, get things going, and then we'll go for the walk. So here I am, I'm out walking. Christopher walking. Oh, dogs. Strange sounding dog. So it is low to mid 40s. There's no wind. It's quite pleasant for being low to mid 40s. I've worked up enough of a core temp. I gotta unzip the jacket here. So Mile High Con, yeah, it was odd. It was fun. I had a good time. I sat on some interesting panels. I went to some interesting panels. And one of the most fun things was that several of the people that I met at Colorado Gold, the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Group, last month came to Mile High Con. And it was their first time. Most of them were on panels. And so it was sort of this odd mental space where I found people from one context in another, where I'd never seen them before. So it was kind of odd. It was still kind of fun, but it was kind of odd. Good morning. So I got to hang out with them. I got to hang out with Blair McGregor, who was, when I met her on the forums at the Science Fiction Writers of America, she was the chair of the Indie Author Committee, but she has since stepped away from that and has gone to work in another capacity within the organization. So I've been a bad CIFWA member. I have to go and see what's going on and touch base with Maggie Hogarth and find out what's happening. So that was cool too, because there's somebody else from yet a third context, the Science Fiction Writers of America. Although I am used to seeing CIFWA people at Mile High Con. It was last year I met Oz Drummond, who's the comptroller, and Cynthia Felice, who is the ombudsman for. Remember, Cynthia was on my panel about money yesterday. Money in science fiction. Give them credit. And I think it was a very interesting panel, particularly in light of some of the conversations we've been having amongst the fan base over at Golden Age of Solar Clipper Group about money and how do we deal with banking. There's apparently an economist has done a study or published a paper somewhere about why you can't have a galactic economy without faster than light communications, without faster than light travel. I think I get it. I think the problem is the time it takes for communications to travel is a limiting factor. And I may have actually read this in some other context, or at least some reference to it in another context, because this idea that the length of time it takes to get messages from a central control to where those messages need to be applied is really one of the governing factors in a lot of history. So the reason that ship captains have complete autonomy while underway is that you can't historically, you couldn't reach them once they were out of sight of land. You couldn't send them a message once they were outside of land. And it wasn't until we had radio that that was possible. And it wasn't reliable until really quite recently, because the only way you could reach ships in the middle of the ocean was via a very specialized means of communication. And even that wasn't terribly reliable. So, a lot of the monk post, a lot of what happens historically has been the result of either a breakdown in communications or lack of communications, a lack of timely information. Which affects banking systems when you're talking about hundreds of years. And in the case of faster than light, if you have to approach some large, if you approach some large degree of some large proportion of the speed of light, then the relativistic effects aboard the ship make banking and other kinds of activities odd, weird. So a week passes on the ship and 50 years pass outside or something. So it's an interesting question, it's an interesting problem. Where if you can go faster than the speed of light, if you can go faster than light, then you can subvert that by managing the relativistics. Which is really what the Burleson units do, what the wormhole idea does in terms of folding space and jumping from here to there without actually going faster than the speed of light, but burrowing through space-time. And going from here to there without actually traversing every point in between. So yeah, very much hand-wavium, very much in theory, yeah. But in theory, it would take the energy from a couple of suns to make one of these holes and not just, you know, a few hours of charging from a fusactor. So it was an interesting conversation. There was a lot of interest. Michael, I don't know what his, I can't remember his name now, was not actually a science fiction writer. He was a journalist from, I think, from Chicago. Fascinating man. Very interesting perspectives. And he had done his homework. He had pages of notes about this, about books that had treated economies in interesting ways, about books that had had decent, interesting economies, the barter economies, the economies of plenty. So he had a lot to offer. There was an actual economist in the audience who was bouncing in his seat most of the time, and it was fun. It was a good conversation. I was a little leery because I came to the end of my prepared questions about 15 minutes into the session. But then the audience started picking up. We had good conversations going back and forth and around the room. And the next thing I know, we only had 2 minutes left. And we moved on. It was good. It was fun. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that I was on, and they made such a big impression. World building was interesting. One of the members of the panel was a game designer. Science fiction game designer, role-playing game designer. So he had a lot of different perspectives on world building and how the world building affects the player experience, which is another way of saying is how the world building affects the characters. They found it interesting that when it was science fiction, I had to design the economy, so I knew why ships were flying around. But when it was fantasy, I had to know the cosmology so that I knew when the seasons were, how long they were, and what that did to the depth of the seasons. And keeping in mind that seasons are not a function of orbital position, but more of axial tilt. And so I couldn't I had to have some interesting things happen in the cosmology to get an even 13-month year for Tanith Fairport, and that to have the quarterlies appear at mid-month for the solstice, but at the end of the month for the equinox. Something that actually didn't play very much into the story, what the actual progression of months was, but which had a big bearing on how and when the various celebrations that Tanith observed occurred. And I'm heading north. I slapped the monk post. Did I say it? I don't remember. So we are heading north. So when I was looking up earlier some of the pagan traditions of the holiday. It's the Witch's New Year. The fallow time when the old lord dies and is laid to rest in preparation for his rebirth at the solstice. The seeds of his rebirth happen at the solstice. One of the interesting ones that I hadn't heard before was opening a westerly window and putting a candle in it to guide the spirits home, which I thought was interesting. I thought that was kind of cool. So I have to write 10,000 words today. I don't know how that's going to happen. I really don't. I've got to get it done. I need this book done by the end of the week. And I'm at 50,000 words. I'm at about 50,000 words. And I've got to get it done by the end of the week because I've got to give Karen at least a couple of weeks to do the editing. I need to give people at least a couple of days to do a beta read. And I have to get it to Podium by the first week of December. So tick tock, tick tock. But for the moment, I'm here at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.